To recap the few things that are relevant for us to understand what we're going to talk about tonight, first, Avraham is best pictured as a tribal chief. Remember that. And the sole motivating plot point ultimately is his search for a successor, someone who will succeed him as leader of his tribe. The crucial plot point that motivates everything and is going to motivate most explicitly what we're going to read today is that his wife Sarah cannot conceive. She is barren. And obviously that limits his ability to create his own successor. And so that's what we saw. We saw him trying to take the initiative to appoint his successor. Last week we focused on Lot. But basically the central challenge Avraham has is who's going to be his successor. And at the same time, every time he seems to take the initiative to do something positive, God's like, oh, no, that's not right. You gotta do something different. And so there's a lot of frustration building with Avraham's attitude towards God. God seems to frustrate many of the initiatives Avraham takes. And basically that leads us with Avraham's central problem. We did see last week, just to emphasize, Lot is in many ways Avraham's legal descendant. That's why he receives land. We talked about this last week. Lot receives land that the Jewish people are forbidden from conquering, because in many ways that is the land of Lot. That is the land of one of the other children of Avraham, not kind of its own place. Lot is an official child of Avraham. He gets his own land. This is the kind of important distinction I mentioned last week, and we're going to see it far more clearly today. The distinction between what I called Birkat Avraham and Brit Avraham. Birkat Avraham, the blessing of Avraham, the bracha of Avraham is greatness, is land, is success. All of the children of Avraham, all of the grandchildren of Avraham, they all receive this. They all get their own part of land. They all get their own greatness. They all receive it. The contrast is with Brit Avraham, which we've not actually encountered yet. We're going to see it today, which is the covenant, which is what we might call Judaism, what we might call the religious responsibility, the specific relationship with God. It becomes Judaism. It wasn't obviously called Judaism in the times of Avraham. But that specific covenant is what's passed down only to a very specific line. But that's an important distinction to already be aware of, an important distinction we're going to see come to play today. So, with all that in mind, let's begin talking about Yishmael. And we're actually not going to talk about Yitzhak. Yitzhak's going to come up, but this year is going to kind of end in what may seem like a strange place, but a conscious choice, in that we're not going to talk about Yitzhak, because Yitzhak's the obvious son of Avraham. I could show you reading really carefully how you see Yitzhak is the chosen son of Avraham, but honestly, it's not like you need me to tell you that. So we're going to focus on Yishmael. There's a lot to talk about with Yishmael, so we're going to kind of try and move pretty quickly. You'll see at some points we'll just kind of jump through major points of narrative without even paying them any attention, because there's a specific thread of the Yishmael story I want to draw your focus to. Can we get a thumbs up, Maury, if you see the screen? Don't you see the source sheet? Everyone see the source sheet? I get no cap. Okay, good. Okay, thank you. Yeah, this is when, not that people should turn on their cameras, but the fewer people with their cameras on, the more impossible feedback is to be able to figure out. So it's a unique Zoom challenge, talking to a screen just filled with names. But there you go. Okay, so we're actually going to read the first three psukim here. Give us a really, really, just, I'm going to read it to you, and then I'll point it out to you. And if you've never noticed it before, you'll be like, wow, I never realized that. Because when I first noticed it, I was also, okay. Source number one, it's by the way, Genesis chapter 16, Perek Tet Zion. It's the last week we ended with 15. So this is the very next chapter. The Sarai Eshet Avram Lo Yalada Lo. Sarai has not given Avraham a child. It's as though we're recapping this important, crucial piece of information. V'la shifcha mitzrit. She has an Egyptian maidservant, Ushma Hagar, who's called Hagar. V'atoma Sarai el Avram. So Sarai turns to Avram. Hinei na at sarani Adonai miledet. God's preventing me from having a child. Bo na el shifchati ulai ebana mimeni. Consort is the JPS translation. Consort with my maid. Perhaps I shall have a son through her. Vayishma Avram lekol Sarai. Avraham listened to her. Vatikach Sarai eshet Avram. Et Hagar hamitzrit shivchata. And so Sarai took her maid Hagar. Miketz eser shanim loshevet Avram be'eretz Kanaan. Avram had dwelt in Canaan 10 years. Vatidan oto la'Avram isha lo ishan. And she gave Hagar to him as a concubine. The crucial thing here is 10 years. In other words, Avram is now 85 years old. We first encountered him when he was 75. Ostensibly, every story we read until this perek took place in the first year of his arrival in the land of Israel. In other words, what we don't realize, what we don't notice, what we don't focus on, is that before this perek begins, if it were a movie, the screen would fade to black, and it would then say at the bottom of the next scene, 10 years later, or 8, 9 years later. This is crucial, because we just had in the previous perek, Avraham being told, no, you're going to have a child, you're going to have a child, you're going to have a biological child, it's going to be yours. That's what God promised him. And yet now, we actually learn, well, what's been happening for the past 10 years? Nothing. Ostensibly, God's not appeared to Abraham during this time. Nothing miraculous has happened. And so the story picks up. I mentioned this in the very first year. The story of Abraham is not a chronological story. We just get vignettes from his life. And now the next time we meet him is 10 years after the Brit Bein Habatarim, 10 years after he expressed his frustration to God. So for 10 years, he's had nothing. And now Sarah herself takes the initiative and gives him Hagar. We don't know what motivates her at this point, but there is an important realization. And again, I talked about this last week. I talked about this previous week, the problem of the omniscient reader, the omniscient reader. We assume we already know what's going to happen. So we don't notice the things that are kind of the way the narrative's described. But ultimately, there has never been a promise that Sarah will be the mother of Abraham's child. We only know at this point in the story that Abraham is going to have a child. We don't know who the mother will be. So Sarah decides, oh, I'll give you Hagar. The crazy thing is the next verse. Verse 4. Vayavo el Hagar vatahar. He cohabited with Hagar and she conceived. Boom. The Torah makes it seem like it was instantaneous, reinforcing this idea that what was in the way of Avraham fulfilling his covenantal destiny was actually Sarah. Avraham, all along, all it took was for someone to take the initiative and to give birth to a child. It was for someone to give Avraham another wife, and boom, now she's already pregnant. This is it. This is the child Avraham has been promised. And then I kind of want to skip verses 4, the rest of 4, 5, 6, which is where Sarah mistreats Hagar. Abraham, you know, is cool with it. The key thing for us is Hagar runs away. Hagar runs away once and is kicked out. We'll see that later. Just to note here, now is not the time to talk about the mistreatment of Hagar. But I mentioned this past Shabbos. Ramban is very critical at this point, says Chata'a Imenu, that Sarah, you know, sinned because of this, that basically the Jewish people, and Avraham too, and that the Jewish people faced future punishment from the descendants of Hagar because of this. There are other readings that try to argue there is a legitimate ancient Near Eastern contextual basis to justify Sarah's treatment here. For our purposes, what's far more interesting is what happens next. So there's a bunch of things to pay attention to during the next few psukim that add a tremendous layer of depth to this story. Verse number 7. Vayimtza'a malach Adonai al ein hamayim bamidbar. An angel of God found her by a spring of water in the wilderness, al ha'ayin b'derech shor. We get its location. Vayayma. Hagar Shivchat Sarai Emizavat the Anatelechu. Where are you? Where have you come from? Where are you going? And then she says, Vatomen Bibne Sarai Givirti Anochi Barachat. Sarah's mistreat. I'm running away from my mistress Sarai. And then the angel says again, "Vayomer la malach Adonai, shuvi al gevurteich, go back, v'hit ani tachad yadei, submit to her." Vayomer la malach Adonai, verse 10, the angel of God said to her, "Harbe arbe zareich, I will greatly increase your offspring, v'lo yisaper merov, and won't be, it will be beyond count." Vayomer la malach Adonai, hinach harav yoladta ben, you're with child, you're gonna have a boy. V'karata shmo Yishmael. You will name him Yishmael. There's a little asterisk there, because note that phrase. Kishama Adonai Elonyech, God has heard your cry, your pain. And then we get told he'll be, you know, a beast of a man. Verse 13. V'atikra shem Adonai hadova eleha ata e'el ra'i. Ki amra hagam halam ra'iti achariyu. And then she calls God, who spoke to her, and she names the, and she calls him, and then we learn the place was called that because of it. Something crazy. We just read something crazy. In those four verses, every verse begins with an angel of God talking to her. The Torah did not need to say every single time, "Vayomela Malach Hashem." Every single time, an angel of God spoke to her. An angel of God spoke to her. An angel of God spoke to her. It's telling us something crucial here about who Hagar is. Again, it's tempting us to think that Hagar is the covenantal mother, because you know who angels never speak to? Sarah. Rabbi Reuben spoke about this past Shabbos instead of Suda Shlishit. We've had Torah learning. Rabbi Reuben spoke about the whole question of the three people, the three men, the three malachim. What are they who visit Abraham and Sarah? There's a whole question over were they humans, were they angels? Oh, lots of different arguments one way or another. There's no doubting who visited Sarah, who visited Hagar. Vayomela malach Hashem. Hagar is the person who is spoken to by angels. Hagar is the person blessed by God. An angel finds her. The angel speaks to her. All of these things are so similar. Even v'karata shmo Yishmael, you will call his name Yishmael. We're going to see again, that's also what God says to Abraham about Yitzchak. She gets a prophecy in verse 12 about who her son will be. And then she calls God, and she names a place because of it. Everything we read from verses 7 through 13 are the hallmarks of a great biblical character. How do you know, if not that there's like an official list of how do you know who's a great biblical character, but you know, does God / angels explicitly speak to them? Do they call back to God? And do they get to name places in Israel? Hagar, there's probably more on that list, but you get the point. Hagar gets this ultimate treatment, and the most interesting example of this is I put a little A, a cross-reference A on verse 10, where it reads, "Harbe arbe et zareich." Harbe arbe et, I will greatly increase your X, occurs three times in the Torah. One time is the curse of Chava. One time is here, the bracha to Hagar about Yishmael. And the third time, Perek Chof Bet of Bereshit, the end of the Akedah story. How does the great conclusion of the Akedah story end, where God kind of blesses Abraham? I will greatly increase your offspring like the stars of the heavens. That bracha, though we think of as the special bracha God bestows to Abraham, I will make your offspring as great as the stars in the heaven, was already encountered. Harbe arbe et zareich v'lo yisaper meirov, and they will be too many to count. That's to Hagar. What we see here very, very clearly is that if we didn't know any better and we asked, oh, who is the covenantal partner of Abraham? Who is the equal to Abraham? Hagar. All it takes after 10 years of God saying, I'm going to give you a child, after 85, okay, he wasn't married to Sarah for 85 years, but after all those years of their life, all of a sudden, he sleeps with Hagar, boom, she's pregnant. And then this same Hagar talking to angels, talking with God, being blessed by God, Hagar seems very clearly to be the equal of Avraham. That's what seems to be the clear indication of what we're reading here. The other thing to note is the final thing I bolded here. Vayikra Avram et Shem Beno Asher Yalda Hagar Yishmael. That Avraham named the child Yishmael. This is interesting, just make a note of it. Despite the fact that God names the child, Avraham also names the child the same thing. There's no explicit indication that Hagar told him. We can assume so, but it's again a very interesting choice of language. So the birth or the pre-birth of Yishmael is marked by a fascinating perek. Takes place 10 years after the previous one, where nothing has happened in terms of God's intervention in Abraham's life. Finally, Sarai takes the initiative, gives Abraham Hagar. We are introduced to this miraculous woman whom God speaks to in ways he doesn't speak to barely anyone else. And her child is blessed. Again, forget you know how this story ends. Everything we have just read seems to point at the fact that the bracha Abraham received is going to be fulfilled through Yishmael, through Hagar, his covenantal partner, and through Yishmael, this son who has been blessed by God before he's even born. If we switch now, you'll see chapter 17. Note how chapter 17 begins. Vayehi Avram ben Tishim Shana v'teisha Shanim. Avraham is 99 years old. In other words, we just jumped again. We just jumped 13 years. Chapter 16 was the Yishmael chapter, the birth of Yishmael chapter. Chapter 17 takes place 13 years later. In other words, we're skipping in the Torah again. This is, you know, the previous Passover rolls into this one, but we're skipping again. For the last 13 years, Avraham has clearly been raising Yishmael to be his successor. He's had 13 years thinking that Yishmael is his child. We can only imagine 13 years of tension between Sarah and Hagar. But ultimately, again, the Torah just skips it. It's not really interested in filling in those extra details. But he was 75, he arrived, he was frustrated, God promised him a child. 10 years later, initiative is taken, he finally has this child. Every single marking of the psukim seemed to indicate this. Next chapter, 13 years later, Avraham is 99. And we read, Vayera Adonai el Avram, Vayome elav ani el Shaddai itholich lefanavi etamim. God appears to him. Boom, hello again. He reminds him who he is. Because it's been 13 years. Again, it's probably been 13 years since he last spoke to God. Avraham has been getting on with his life. He's been doing what tribal chieftains do while they raise their child. There's a huge amount we just skipped, which is important. It's the name change. It's the command of Brit Milah. It's some very, very important things to note. But for our purposes, what's crucial is what we read next. Verse 15. Vayayma Elohim el Avram. Sarai ishtacha lo tikrat shma Sarai, ki Sarah shma. So now he renames Sarai, Sarah. So this is now our first indication in the Torah that Sarah is the covenantal partner. This is where things, again, you've never thought of that because we know this story before we start reading it. But every indication we've had until now is that Hagar is the covenantal partner. And now we're reintroduced to, who else is getting the super special name change? Sarah. She is now Sarah, no longer Sarai. Uveirachti ota, and I will bless her. Vegam natati mimena lacha ben, and I will give you a son by her. Uveirachtiha v'hayta l'goyim, amalcheha mimena yiyu. Rulers of people will issue from her. And then, Avraham's reaction. Vayipol Avram al panav vayitzchak, he falls on his face and laughs. Vayomer belibo halven meyashana yivaled, can a child be born to a man of 100 years old? Ve'im Sarah habat tishim shana teled, and can Sarah have a child at 90? This is, everyone always spots kind of Avraham's chutzpah in this sentence. But I also wonder how much of it is in some ways frustration. Avraham just spent the last 13 years assuming Ishmael's his kid, assuming all of these things, and now all of a sudden, wait, you've just thrown me in a loop. And we know that because that's his very next... This was, by the way, Vayomer Bilibo. This was what his first thought was to himself. His first spoken thought, Vayomer Avraham El Ho'elohim, Lu Yishmael Yichei Lefanecha. Oh, that Yishmael might live by your favor. Avraham, or the first thing Avraham thinks about is Yishmael. It makes sense. Yishmael's his son. His 13-year-old son he's been raising as his successor. His first thought is, you just told me there's going to be a new kid on the block. Well, what's going to happen to my old child? We already get this fear of rejection. Like Yishmael, yichi alafanecha, that Yishmael will live. Avraham already fears some sort of dramatic resolution to Yitzchak and Yishmael both being alive, both successors being alive. We already get a clue to it here that Avraham's first thought is, what about Yishmael? His instant reaction in his mind, seriously? You're going to give a 99-year-old and a 100-year-old and a 90-year-old a kid? And his second reaction is, what's going to happen to Yishmael? And then we read verse 19. Vayayimeh Elohim aval Sarah ishtecha yored lechabenu. She's going to have a child. Vekarata et shmo Yitzchak. You will name him Yitzchak. Now again, I put the asterisk there. You'll remember from earlier, there was an asterisk by... Vekarata shma Yishmael, same verse, different name, the same template, the exact same instruction. It already is indicating this similarity between Yitzchak and Yishmael. And we read, V'hakimoti et briti et olivrit olam zara acharav. And my covenant, I will maintain my covenant with Yitzchak. Now we are introduced to the Brit. It was just described. This is where we see the Brit and the Bracha distinction. In verse 19, the Brit is going to be to Yitzchak. Ule Yishmael, verse 20. Shematicha, I have listened to you. Hine beirachti oto, I bless him. Vehifreti oto, vehirbeti oto, b'mod ma'ad, I will make him great. Shneim asan nisiyim yolid. He shall be the father of 12 chieftains. Unitativ legoi gadol. I will make him a great nation. The number 12 seems familiar from something. Oh yeah, Yaakov. This is the distinction between Brit and Bracha, made explicit in these verses. In verse 19, we learn, you will have a child called Yitzhak v'hakimoti et b'riti ito. I will establish my covenant with him. But in the very next verse, we learn Yishmael is still berachti oto. He still receives the Bracha. And he receives 12 tribes. The parallel is obvious. The whole idea here is Yishmael and Yitzchak are not quite equals because of the Brit, but they are both the legitimate children of Avraham. They receive the exact same bracha. But the difference is, as underscored again by verse 21, after explicitly saying Yishmael will be blessed, ve'ed b'riti akim ed Yitzchak. But my covenant I will maintain with Yitzchak, asher teded l'cha Sarah l'amoid hazeh, that Sarah will, you know, give birth to you next season, b'shana ha'acheret next year. And then v'yachal adabeto v'yal olim al Avraham, and then God, poof, in a poof of smoke, disappears again. This is an important setup. Because we now know that there are not one covenantal child, or not one biological child of Avraham, but two. Both will receive the same bracha. Both will be effectively the same type of child, receiving the same rewards from God. But one, Yitzchak, that is his name, that is what he will be called, that is what Avraham is told to call this child, call him Yitzchak. That child alone will receive the Brit. What I skipped is the rest of the narrative, which is the actual Brit Milah. Yishmael circumcises at 13, Avraham circumcises himself at 99, boom, circumcises everyone else in his household. This is actually the end of Parashat Lech Lecha. The beginning of Parashat Vayera, which we read last week, begins with the visitors, once again underscoring, telling Sarah she's going to have the child. And then we get to a whole bunch of, we have the story of Sodom, we have the story of Avimelech, and then we skip to what's also Rosh Hashanah Leinik, chapter 21 of Sefer Bereshit. Vadonai pakad et Sarah, Ka'asher Amar. God remembered Sarah just as he'd said. Vayas Adonai l'Sarah ka'asher diber. Vatahar vatelet Sarah le'Avraham ben l'zkunav. She gave a child during his old age. La'moed asher diber ato'olim. Just as God had spoken. Vayikra Avraham et shem beno hanolad lo. Avraham called the son who had been born to him, asher yalda lo Sarah, Yitzchak. He calls this child born to him that Sarah had given him Yitzchak. You'll notice, by the way, that phrasing, and I realize there's a delay in my scroll up, but Vayikra Avram et Shem Beno Ashel Yalda Hagar Yishma. Again, same flow of a verse, same idea. God tells the parent, you will name this kid this thing, and then Avraham does it. In the Yitzchak case, and what I'll say about one more thing on the omniscient reader, it could be that the Torah anticipates we know the story. And so the real shock is not, oh, look at all these things in Yitzchak's story that we've already read in Yishmael's, but the reverse. All those things we thought made Yitzchak distinctive and special, we already read in earlier chapters when it comes to Yishmael. But either way, the Torah is making it very clear here that the distinction between Yishmael and Yitzchak is not as strong as we might think. And then, verse 4, Vayomal Avraham et Yitzchak beno ben Shemar Yanim, he gave him his brida 80 days old, kashit zivat olim, just as God has commanded. Fi Avraham ben Meah, ben Ma'at Shana, behivared lo Yitzchak beno, he's 100. And then we get some really, really interesting psukim that I think are the epitome of kind of literary cleverness in the Torah. Vatomer Sarah. Sarah said the following. Sachok asali Elohim. God has brought me sachok, laughter. Kol hashoimeya yitzchakli. Everyone who hears will laugh with me. Vatomer mimi lela la Avraham, hinika vanim Sarah, ki yiladi veniz kunav. Who would have said to Avraham that Sarah would, you know, suckle children? But look, I've done it. This is a really strange thing for Sarah to be saying. It's a very, you don't need these verses for any reason whatsoever. But remember, what's happening here is she's not talking to, like, you know, thin air. The way I see what's happening here is Sarah is emphasizing the miraculous nature of her child. Sarah is emphasizing the, you know, you look at the shoresh of Tzchok, and well, Yitzchak has the same shoresh as the name Yitzchak because it's the same name. She is emphasizing the fact that this child born to her is this covenantal child, Yitzchak. Something that I think is important, and it's going to be key to understand what I'm going to claim in a few moments. Don't think of Yitzchak just as a child's name. Like I call Yair Yair and Shai Shai. Think of it more as some sort of official designated title name. That's not unfamiliar. The idea that sometimes the firstborn child of a tribal chieftain or royal family has a certain name, not crazy. You know, the royal family cycles through the same names, and at a certain point, they change someone's name if it doesn't fit the actual name, but they tend to just name their kids certain things to have these royal names already there. Yitzchak is the name God instructs Avraham to give to his covenantal child. The problem is that for the past 13 years, that covenantal child has been established as Yishmael. That child, that special child, has been established as Yishmael. Hagar got back to the Avraham family and spent the whole time probably telling Avraham, an angel spoke to me, an angel spoke to me, an angel spoke to me, reinforcing the idea that this kid is special. We now have this 13-year-old who's grown up, he's strong, he's ready to, you know, he's learning the ropes from his father, and now Sarah's given birth to a baby. So she's seeking to establish and impress upon everyone, this is the Yitzchak. It's like the classic, she's dropping it in every way possible. Tzachok asali. God gave me laughter. Anyone who hears me Yitzchakli, it's like wink, wink, nudge, nudge. She's punning the entire time with this name that she's expecting her child to be called, declaring the miraculous nature of the birth of Yitzchak, Mimila la Avraham. There you go. And then we read some crucial verses. Vayigdal hayeled vayigamal. The child grew up and he became a camel. That's not actually what it means, but I think that's funny because vayigamal. Okay, it wasn't funny, I know, but because I don't see anyone's face on the screen, I assume everyone's just like laughing right now continuously. Vayas Avraham mishte gadol. Avraham made a great feast. Beyom higamal et Yitzchak. On the day, Yitzchak was weaned. And then we get the fascinating phrase. Vatera Sarah. Sarah saw et ben Hagar ha-Mitzrit asher yalda la-Avraham mitzachik. Sarah saw the son that Hagar the Egyptian had born to Avraham mitzachik, playing. Vatomer li-Avraham, she says, Garesh ha-Ama hazot ve'et ben, I kick out that slave woman and her son. Ki lo yirash ben ha-Ama hazot im b'ni im Yitzchak. She will not take over, he will not inherit from my son Yitzchak. A few things to note in verses 8 through 10. The first is anonymity in the first two verses. We don't get the names of either child. That's intentional. We have the Yeled and the Ben. That is how they are referred to. What gets Sarah so angry? She sees Yishmael being Mitzachik. So the typical translation is playing. Makes sense, 13-year-old, it's a party. You imagine he's enjoying himself. He's the future successor to Avraham. Makes sense that he'd be, you know, having fun at the party. He's happy. He just has a new baby brother. He's 13. That's exciting for him. Chazal famously say, you know, Mitzachek is actually all the Averot possible rolled into one. That's not Pshat, though. The key word is, well, what's he being? He's being Mitzachek. That's a very intentional choice of word, given that's the golden word of this chapter, of this story. Yishmael is being Yitzchak. He's embodying, he's being the embodiment of this covenantal child. This kid is told to become Yitzchak. The covenantal child will be Yitzchak. We learn about the Yeled. The Yeled is weaned, but he's still a few years old. That's it. And then at the party, this other child, the Ben Hagar Hamitzrit Asher Yaldali Avraham, the child Hagar, who remember God was talking to just a few parakim earlier, promising all these things, that child's being Mitzachek. Why does Sarah freak out? Kilo Yirash Ben Hama Hazot Im Beni Im Yitzchak. That child will not inherit with my son, with Yitzchak. That is her fear. You have two people. You have two potential rivals to the throne. If you don't take care of one of them, the other one might come and try to claim it. It's like the famous, I think it was in Turkey or in like not modern day Turkey, whatever, like in somewhere around there, like if the king died, all the sons would like all try to get to the palace as quickly as possible because the first one to touch the throne, you know, became the new ruler. So they were also all trying to kill each other the whole time. That's what's at play here. Tribal tensions. Sarah is fearful. What's going to happen? Yitzchak is going to be overswept by Yishmael. Yishmael's older. He has a lot going for him. He's been blessed by God also. Hagar, his mother, has been explicitly, you know, called by God. That's what she fears. She fears this other kid being Mitzachek, assuming the role of Yitzchak in Avraham's life. The only way to stop it, he's 13, he's older. The only way to stop it is by kicking them out. That's the only way she'll ever ensure that there's no more rival. And Garesh here does not mean like, you know, go out, please, you know, politely escort them out to leave. It means kill them. It means, and I didn't put this in the verses. I actually have written about this elsewhere for some shameless self-promotion. If you Google my name and Avraham's test of loyalty, I talk more about this there on the Lehrer House website. When you look at the things Abraham gives Hagar and Ishmael to leave, I just put these verses in ellipses. But when you look at the things Abraham gives Hagar and Ishmael, that's not the kind of supplies to make your way through the desert. That's the kind of supplies, you know, Abraham is wealthy. He could have given his son at this point a whole, you know, troop of donkeys carrying tons of supplies to get them somewhere. He doesn't. He gives them a water skin and a couple of other things. That's it. Garesh ha'amahazot ve'edbana, kick out that kid. It means get rid of them. What's interesting is what we read. What follows, verse 17. And this will be familiar, given how we've seen Hagar. Vayishma Elohim et kol hana'ar. God heard the cry of the child. Vayikra malach Elohim el Hagar min hashmayim, vayom el malach Hagar. Oh, look, an angel is speaking once again to Hagar. Al tir'i ki shama Elohim et kol hana'ar. God has heard the cry of the child, Bashar Husham. I will make him a great nation. And then God opens her eyes and she sees a well of water. That's a whole classic question. Is it a miracle or is it she just hadn't noticed it? But the important thing here is verse 19, Vayifkach Elokim et Einah. God does it. God performs a miracle for Hagar. Verse 20. Vayhi Elohim et Hana'a vayigda. God was with the boy as he grew up. Vayeshev Bamidbar vehi vorem keshet. He dwelt in the wilderness, became a bowman. And then we learn, you know, he lived in the wilderness and his mother got him a wife from the land of Egypt, which makes sense because she was an Egyptian woman. Hagar is never abandoned by God. This idea that Ishmael is, and this is, again, this is what Lord Sachs really doubles down on, is an idea, is that if you read the Torah, what we think are the sympathetic characters are actually often the bad guys, and who we want to read as the bad guys are actually, the Torah is at pains to emphasize, are actually treated really well. Ishmael is the perfect example. No one else in the Torah kind of gets this special treatment, except Ishmael and Hagar. But for us, it just really underscores a very important point. Yishmael is the son of Avraham. Yishmael is blessed by God. The distinction is simply one of bracha and brit. Both children receive the same bracha, the same intervention by God, the same care in their lives, just Yitzchak receives the brit. Yitzchak receives the covenant. While we don't have any indication about Esav, ostensibly that would be the same with Esav too. He also receives Birkat Avraham. He definitely gets his own land. He's definitely his own tribal chieftain. But the important thing is just to once again see the way the Torah treats Hagar. That this entire time, Avraham has been driven by this quest to have a kid. And ultimately, he ends up with more than he bargained for. He ends up with two children who are both in many ways his successor, just one slightly different than the other. What I don't want to talk about is Akedat Yitzchak. Again, if you Google, you know, Avraham's test of loyalty, I compare the Akedah to here, and there's tremendous parallels between the two stories. Ultimately, Avraham is also asked to sacrifice, you know, Sarah tells him to sacrifice this son, and then God tells him to sacrifice the other son. Ultimately, and I mentioned this on the first year, a very cool thing is the story of Abraham begins with him abandoning his father and ends with him having to abandon his son. Yitzchak, interestingly, at the end of the Akedah, where does he go to? Be'er Lochai Ro'i, which is where Hagar lives. Abraham never sees Hagar, even though the Midrash has, you know, Keturah, Abraham's third wife is Hagar. Al Pi Peshat, Abraham never sees Hagar or Yishmael again, which seems to imply, at least we can assume, he doesn't think they survived their trip in the desert. Yishmael, we'll read it this week's parasha, Yishmael does turn up to bury Avraham, which indicates, you know, Yishmael and Yitzchak bury him together, which indicates the relationship between the two is definitely, you know, cordial at worst. They definitely have a relationship with each other. But ultimately, what drives this final part of the story is that this third son of Abraham is the most, I think, the most interesting of them all. Lot was cool. Lot was interesting. He got his own land. He got his own kind of, you know, part of the tribe. Great, wonderful. Eliezer doesn't really count. He's considered, but, you know, doesn't really ever get anything. Yitzhak, we know what happens to Yitzhak. We, you know, the rest of the Torah, basically what happens to Yitzhak and his kids, yada, yada, yada. But what's really interesting is Yishmael here. Because ultimately, Avraham's search for a successor leads him to a new point of tension within his family. He gets the successor in Yishmael. He gets this child blessed by God through Hagar, who herself is blessed by God. And yet, ultimately, it's only for God to turn around once again and say, 13 years after that initial time, no, actually not. And so this relationship God has with Abraham, and I said at the very beginning in the first year, we assume God's relationship with Abraham is one thing. I'm honestly not sure if it ever is what we think it is, and if it's not always God just frustrating Abraham. He tells him he's going to have a kid. And we saw at 85, he finally has a kid on his own initiative, and God actually blessed that kid. Only for 13 years later, for him to turn around and be like, and now, go. You know, nope, that's not going to be your kid. You're going to have a different kid. And then he finally has this other kid, Yitzhak, and God's like, and I'll go kill him. At the end of the day, I'm not sure what to make of it. But what we read continuously is a relationship between Abraham and God, which is far from as clear-cut as we think. It's far more strange. And it's full of a whole host of attitudes and experiences Abraham goes through, which are fundamentally different to what we think we, you know, read when we look through these parashiyot. I have nothing more to say on Yishmael. And if anyone has any questions, feel free to either ask them or check the chat. And while I have my drink, we'll give it time for the questions. Unless no one has a question. Okay. It doesn't look like anyone has a question, which is fine. No need for people to have questions. Okay. In that case, next week. Oh, Howard, are you about to ask a question? Okay, no, you're just getting ready to wave bye. Okay, the sudden camera face. Tons of questions. That is that means you're about to type all of them? Or you now have time to reflect, and over the coming days we'll reach out with the questions. That is fine. That is perfect. Great. Okay. Next week we'll be on. Oh.
Any possibility, and this is just to establish out-of-the-box questioning, any possibility that Avraham set out to kill Yitzchak because he wanted Yishmael to be the Yerusha? I know God said it, but maybe Avraham was telling someone that God said it.
So I think that's hard just because of the the child whom you love, which seems to imply something special about Yitzhak. But it's definitely, I mean, what I argue in this article, I keep on shamelessly self-promoting people to Google, I argue that the entire prompting of the Akedah is because of what Avraham does here is so disturbing that God basically makes him do it again with Yitzhak to actually check Avraham didn't just kind of like go crazy. It's a lot more complex an argument than that, but that's basically the rough idea of it. That God is literally testing Avraham to do a repeat of what he does in Perek Chav Aleph. In Perek Chav Bet, the Akedah, the language of the Akedah is very similar to the language of this chapter in so many ways that it's blatantly obvious the two are linked. I first noticed it one Rosh Hashanah because article print the two stories, one on top of the other. So it's actually very easy to start like noticing linguistic parallels between the two because they're one's on top of the other. I think God is prompted to encourage Avraham to kill his kid. As horrific as it seems to us, to prove that this one we just read about now, the Yishmael effective killing, is not as, basically the Akedah proves that Avraham is not this kind of bloodthirsty tribal chieftain trying to just, you know, follow whims of other people. But I make the argument more complexly there, so I think I still stand by what I wrote there. So I encourage people to Google Avraham's Test of Loyalty and my name and the Lair House website, and boom. And I just wrote something on last week's parasha, which if not read yet, you should read.